Hello, party people, and welcome to Office Hours aboard the Virgin Scarlet Lady cruise ship in Corsica, the birthplace of Napoleon Bonaparte. This one, we have about 10 minutes before a mandatory cruise ship drill that's going to sound the alarm. So in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to know our time is up when all of a sudden we hear the honking of a cruise ship. Those of you watching on YouTube can also move around. This is a 360 camera. I suppose I don't know what you're going to like about the other view. It's just the cruise ship itself. But this is the only camera that I have right now because I left one camera in a taxi cab in, Barcelona. And then another camera, I have no idea where it is right now. I'm one of those people where I believe that everything has its right place. Like whenever I put something down, I know exactly where that thing is going to be. And my partner Eve is not like that. So right now Eve is sleeping and there's stuff scattered all over our cruise ship cabin. I could not find my regular camera for love or money. So I was like, well, I'll give you a 360 view and see what happens. I got some interesting questions lined up. So the first question, let's go get this fired up from PolGab. I'm on a European cruise, and so that's thus the background here. The first question is from Chandwich, who asks, hey Brent, at what point in your career did you start to feel truly confident in your ability to solve problems that you have never seen before? So a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, Microsoft had this program called the Microsoft Certified Master. Before I went through that, I always felt like I was an imposter. I was like, there must be someone who has more secret keys than I have. There must be somebody who is more innately in touch with how databases work. Like they must be like Neo in the Matrix and they just know Kung Fu. And the MCM program had like a 75% failure rate, and it was notoriously challenging. And even a lot of the people who passed it didn't pass on their first try. They took until their second try before they were able to pass it. And I passed it on the first try. And I was like, oh, there isn't a secret decoder ring. And like talking to the other Microsoft Certified Masters and like being able to answer some of their questions about how different things worked, I was like, oh, I do kind of know this stuff. And that just gave me the confidence. I felt before I always was like, well, let's roll up our sleeves and figure this out. You know, how hard can it be? It's software. It was written by humans. You know, humans can understand it. But after that, I really had the confidence to say, okay, I have no problem taking money in exchange for doing work. And for a really long time, still today, I still believe that if I can't figure the problem out, I don't want to charge somebody. And it's only happened a couple of times in my career where I just was like, okay, I've run out of ideas. I've talked to people that I know. This isn't ringing any bells with anybody. And a classic example of that was we were having random problems with performance that really felt like a CPU was hiccuping, felt like a CPU was pausing from time to time. And I was like, man, I'm so sorry. I can't figure this out at the OS level and at the SQL Server level. It just feels like, I don't know if it's a driver or something that's causing the whole CPU to freeze from time to time. I said, I'm sorry, I can't charge you for this because I can't prove it with a smoking gun. But if I was you, I would move to another server and just see if it repeats the problem because I don't think it's your database. And it was really funny. The client was like, well, it's okay. We'll pay you. You know, clearly we felt or there's a value to us going to the best people we could find and them being stumped by it as well. They said, oh, you know, Microsoft was stumped by it. The hardware vendor was stumped by it. And I was like, at what point do you just not switch servers? And sure enough, they did switch servers and it went away. So it was a problem with a defective CPU, which I found interesting. Next up, Arez says, hi Brent, following your course, I've run SPBlitz on a freshly recovered database. I've got about 450 leftover fake indexes from Wizard's warning, but the script on the URL returns nothing. One of the cool things about SPBlitz is that it's open source. Like any T-SQL script, you can just open it. Not that anything you can open is open source, that's a different there. But just go open the script and you can see the diagnostic script that I'm running. You can copy it out, you can edit it, you can get more information from the underlying management views if you want. I would encourage you to go find the do a control F in that script for leftover fake wizards, and you'll see exactly where the data is coming from. It could be any number of things. You could be misrunning the script from the web page. It could be that your SQL server has some unknown problem that the world has never seen before, like data in two different DMVs doesn't match up. But any time that you're running a script and you have questions about where the results are coming from, by all means, open up the script and go take a look. It's a whole new world. TechDB asks, hi Brent, could you please briefly describe the use case of CDC and change data capture? Okay, first off, CDC and change data capture are the same thing. As you might cleverly guess from the initials CDC, they stand for change data capture. Secondly, if I could briefly describe the use case, it's for when you want to capture the data that has changed. Oh, isn't that amazing? The name of the thing describes what it does. That honestly doesn't happen that often in real life. We got a lot of products out there. Azure SQL DB, Hyperscale, Managed Instances, you know, like these names that are kind of cryptic and they don't really tell you what they do. But when you're blessed with a feature called Change Data Capture, and you're wondering what it's used for, I'm going to be honest, TechDB, if you can't figure that one out, you should probably close your computer, unplug it, and then throw it into the ocean, because technology is probably not going to be a good fit for you. Next up, Ricardo asks, Brent, what are your recommended questions to ask when you're talking to a potential employer in a database interview? You know what? I got that question often enough that I recorded a whole class for it. If you go to brentozar.com, click training up at the top. I don't know why it's not like it's up at the top of the screen, but if you click training up at the top, there is a DBA job interview Q&A class, and it also includes questions for you to ask a potential employer. It's great for practicing. Next up, speaking of practicing, AG Avoider says, is it any kind of bad practice to use the same file share as your FCI, as your failover clustered instance quorum witness, and as your log shipping storage? My thing with cluster quorums is it absolutely, positively cannot ever fail. You want your quorum witness to be bulletproof, like the most reliable thing you have outside of your Active Directory domain controller. So why would you want anything else touching it? I wouldn't. I would want as few things touching it as possible. So I've never had anyone pose that question to me before, but it just seems to me as I wouldn't go there. It's not like additional file shares cost you extra. Keep that quorum witness file share to be used by as few things as possible to make sure nobody fills it up, for example. That would be bad. Next up, Daniel asks, a third-party application inserts millions of rows to a SQL server one row at a time. How do I optimize that process if the client code cannot be changed? Oh, this is so funny. I was faced with this problem. And he continues, I'm considering using memory-optimized non-durable tables and then moving the data to standard ones. The first thing you want to check is what's your wait stat, and it's most likely going to be write log. So then what I would do, if the data is, you could restart the process easily, my favorite way to do this is to put the database, put that table in a database that's got delayed durability turned on. Delayed durability, just let SQL Server consider the transaction written as soon as the transaction comes in. I love that because it just makes write log completely go away. And if you think that that table can't be moved to another database, sure it can. Just leave a view behind or a synonym that points over to that other object. But I don't want to set delayed durability for other tables that do matter. I just only want to set it for that one table. Postgres has the concept of non-logged tables. SQL Server does not. SQL Server just has that delayed durability at the database level. So that's the trick that I would prefer. Next up, GSurgeon says, "Hi Brent, one of my servers has almost 20% stolen memory. Any pointers on how I can find the culprit? I suspect that it might have something to do with large, mostly unused memory grants." So I'll be honest, I've never had a problem where I said, I think that the root cause is stolen memory. What I would do is I would always start with wait stats first. Look at what your top wait stats are. And if you find, for example, that resource semaphore is a concern for you, which is when SQL Server is waiting on memory before it can process memory grants for queries, then just use spblitzcache to look for, you can either sort by unused grant or memory grant. You said that you think it has something to do with large, mostly unused memory grants. I wouldn't leap to the unused assumption. I would sort by memory grant first. Then, if I have an overwhelming list of stuff that's all getting 25% memory grants, then I would sort by unused grant only to find the things that are easier to solve. Because generally, it's easy, for me at least, it's usually more easy to solve unused memory grants when something's asking for 25% of RAM but it only uses 1 megabyte. That's usually an easier problem for me to solve than one that asks for 25% of the RAM and actually needs it. So that's what I do. Next up, my tea got cold says, "How can I keep on top of column store maintenance when measuring fragmentation takes too long?" Very simple. Go attend my Fundamentals of Column Store class, and I teach you exactly how to do it in there. That's my Fundamentals of Column Store class. I think it's like $89, which is a rounding error compared to how much problems that you face when you're using Column Store. I teach you so much good stuff inside there. Go hit that class. Super important. If you think that you've been through this class and you don't have that answer, I mean, I'm looking at it and I know the answer is in that class. But then on the module you think is relevant, post that question as a comment on that module. And then I can say, go to this minute point of the video, and then there's exactly where the answer is. Next up, Srinivas says, "In query store reports, I've got a lot of system queries, like Microsoft related, that are showing up for like queries with high CPU. Is there a way to bypass these in the GUI?" Nah, see, here's what's happening. Two things are happening. One, your server is bored out of its gourd. There is nothing going on. Like, this is a development server. Put query store down. Query store is for production servers that are under ugly load. When you need that black box recording. So was one. What was the other? Two, you probably have, three things might be going on. Two, you probably have, dang it, where was I going? Oh, query store configured incorrectly. Go watch Aaron Stellato's class on query store in Pluralsight. And that she teaches you how to configure query store so that you don't grab really tiny queries. Because I bet that you're seeing queries that look like high CPU when it's just really high relative to nothing else happening on that server. Finally, what was the third thing? Oh, finally, a third thing. You may be thinking that something is coming from Microsoft when it's actually not. It may be coming from like third-party tools. I'll give you an example of one of the clients that I had. We had a query that looked like it was a Microsoft system query, but it turned out that somebody had deployed a stored procedure and they had just copy-pasted a big chunk of code. They still had T-SQL queries at the bottom that weren't supposed to be part of their stored procedure, and those queries ran every time the stored proc ran, so it just artificially inflated those queries, made them look like they were being run all the time when really it was just a deployment problem. Next up, Ben asks, hey, Brent, what are your thoughts on SQL Server on Linux? I don't have any. I've never seen it used to solve a problem. I think that it solved a marketing problem when Microsoft wanted to acquire customers running Oracle on Linux. And those customers tend to think that Windows is a toy operating system. I love Windows. I think it's really cool. But they tend to think that Windows is a toy, and they're like, real databases run on Linux. And Microsoft was probably like, okay, let's put it on Linux. I don't have anything against it, other than if you want harder support, that's one way to get it. Because if you think it's hard to solve SQL Server problems on Windows, wait till you try to solve it on an operating system that people just don't use for SQL Server. Your support problems will be a lot more challenging. Next up, Not a Real DBA asks, my app has an entity framework query that uses paging on a complex subquery. SQL will produce a top-end sort operator if I inline the paging. Okay, so this is way beyond what I can solve via a quick Q&A here. What you want to do is take the exact query, go to pastetheplan.com, pastetheplan.com, and as the name might cleverly suggest, that is where you paste the plan. You paste the execution plan in there. Then you can go take it over to dba.stackexchange.com or to sqlserver central.com, and you can say, help me figure out what I need to do with this. And I know that you're thinking, I can't touch the query, it's entity framework. There's this thing, you may want to be sitting down when you hear about it, called an index. I know, it's not like the index cards that you use, those little flashcards where you wrote down all the questions and answers in order to cheat on your job interview so that you could get that job. But this index thing can actually make queries go faster. Now I'm being sarcastic, of course, but there are ways that you can use indexing to support pagination queries, and you'll learn about those when you start to post your problem. Next up, Jonathan asks, hey Brent, just curious, do you have a college degree or did you go a different route into tech? Oh, this is terrible. I dropped out of college 3 times. The first time I had a full ride scholarship. I was a national merit finalist. And full ride scholarship, you know, anywhere I wanted to go except MIT. I couldn't get for free into MIT or Berkeley, both of those that I really wanted to get into. Although I'm glad I didn't in retrospect. I hated college. I couldn't stand it. I liked dating and drinking. And so I had a real hard time with college. So I ended up going back into hotels that my family had all worked in hotels and restaurants. Going back into hotels and then going into hotel technology companies and then into technology from there. Nothing against college. I have a lot against college because it's really expensive, puts you in for a lifetime of debt. It really makes you start it on a tough foot. And I don't think it teaches a lot of the things that really matter. But I do think it's used as a checkbox, as a filter these days when there's an overwhelming number of job candidates that it's easier to get through a stranger's filtering process if you have a degree. But if I had kids, the thing that I would say to them is, all right, you're going to go to the best college that we can get you into, and you're going to go for like 2 years. But I don't really care what grades you get. What I want is every month we're going to get together. We're going to talk about who are the contacts that you've made. You're going to stay in touch with them for the rest of your life. It is a starting point for your professional networking. Because a lot of the high school stuff that you're going to do, those people are maybe yo-yos, they may be destined for nothing in life, but college will be your first cut pass filter of people who are actually going places, hopefully, we hope. It's also a great way to meet co-founders, things like that. Says the guy who dropped out of college 3 times. Next up, Chris says, the company I work for blocks all of the AI providers as well as Copilot. Do you think their stance on these tools may change as they become more embedded with the way people work? Yes and no. The problem is there are still a lot of companies out there who forbid internet access on their computers. who, and I've worked with some of them, who you're not allowed to use the internet while you're at work. You're not allowed to copy paste open source scripts into their servers, for example. There will always be paranoid companies like that. I don't think that's ever going to change. There will always be some of them. That doesn't mean that it's going to be the majority, but there will always be companies out there like that. Wasn't there supposed to be an alarm bell on here? I thought there was supposed to be. Maybe they're just not playing it on the open decks. Let's see here. Next up, I'm Trying says, given that new versions of Management Studio and drivers are opting for security by default, are companies moving towards CA signed certificates on their SQL Server instances? I have no idea, because I guess I'm kind of a weird, you know, I'm a consultant, and so I have kind of this weird job, and I focus on performance tuning. I don't do any security work. My contract forbids it. I will say I don't think I've seen any. I don't think I've seen any unusually high numbers of people switching. Usually with enterprises, they're real hesitant to deploy new stuff quickly. It's not like a big giant enterprise says, okay, Management Studio 21 is out, everyone move now. You know, it usually takes months or years to plan those kinds of deployments. I think you'll probably see it years from now, but you're not seeing it widespread in 2025. And then finally we have, whoops, I accidentally flagged one instead of putting it up on the screen there. Last up, we have Potato with an E. What a great question, or what a great name. I'm a new employee and my databases have no lock hints all over the place. I brought up implementing RCSI, and they said you can't implement RCSI without removing all no-locks first. Do you have any techniques for continuing with the conversation? So there are two real questions at the heart of your question. One is, are they correct? And for that, I'll give you the same advice I would say anytime anyone gives you any kind of fact, say, oh, what makes you say that? Or can you show me some proof of that? And then that'll help. They can't say, well, it's because I told you so. You know, have them do a demo. Show me what the problem is. In the case of this one, they may be under the impression that because of no lock, it doesn't immediately fix the dirty reads. And that's true. The queries are still going to have the same crappy results that they always had. Just because you had RCSI turned on doesn't fix those automatically. But now as they remove no lock from queries, they'll start to get accurate results. But that doesn't mean you can't turn on RCSI. The people who want accurate results can start removing that no lock hint whenever they want to. The other part of your question is, how do I get people to do something they don't want to do? There has to be a reward for them. I mean, there's the old saying of how do you motivate people? There's the carrot and the stick. The carrot means you dangle a carrot in front of a horse and it motivates the horse to move forwards. The stick means you womp the horse on the rear end with a stick and try to motivate them with negative reinforcement. If you just started at the company and if you're not like the CEO, you can't use negative reinforcement. You can't whip them into doing something they don't want to do. So the only way you can get things done is to use positive reinforcement to reward them for doing something. In this case, the reward would be the more accurate query results. I'm going to be honest, if they've never seen the problem with inaccurate report data before, you are probably not going to save them. Pick your battles. Ask them, when you want to get them to change their behavior, ask them what their biggest problem is. What's the thing that they're struggling with that they really need to know how to do? And that will guide your actions so that they'll start to have credibility, or that you'll start to have credibility with them, and it'll be easier to get them to do the things you want them to do later. All right, that's good. So I am in Corsica. So isn't it cool how you can see the sun gradually move over time? You know, now that I'm out in the sun, perfect timing because I should get out of here. I should show you here. Let's take this fancy pants 360 camera. Watch me fall over. Take this fancy pants 360 camera and I'll extend it up. Let's see if I can get it up on this thing. so you can get a look for look at Corsica here. So now you can look around. This little port is the birthplace of Napoleon Bonaparte. Very scenic little port. There's a whole lot more to the port over on the other side of this cruise ship, like the family home of Napoleon Bonaparte. There is a museum that was founded by his uncle that has a large collection of Renaissance and Baroque art. So that's probably what I'm going to be doing. Oh, I say probably. At 1 p.m. I have a jet ski excursion, so there's a bunch of us going out on jet skis and racing around the harbor. But until then, I'll try and act like a person of culture and go get my learn on. So I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.